Hey, property insiders, I'm Mike Stenhouse, and this is the Inside Property Investing Podcast. You are in the right place if you are an aspiring or existing investor looking to build a portfolio and a property business that works for you. And from this podcast, you're going to learn from all of my insights and advice from over a decade in the industry, as well as the lessons learned from hundreds of other successful investors. So you can listen to what worked for them and avoid what didn't. I hope you enjoy today's podcast, and whatever you're up to today, I hope you have a fantastic day. Thanks for listening. Today's guest, Louise Smith, is an equestrian by trade, but she's been investing in properties since around about 2006, when she bought something just before that financial crisis that we all probably remember well. She was, however, able to buy that at such a good discount that the recession, the financial crisis, didn't really impact her that much. It was unaffected by the crash because of the price that she paid for it. And that moment taught her the value of buying well and how most things can be resolved by a good purchase price. She's continued to invest since then. She's flipped houses and in 2016 really started investing a little bit more aggressively, which is what we focus on in today's interview. How she went from that kind of part-time, passive, on the side property investor to something that is much more of a business now. She has done a huge amount in that time. She's very proud, rightly so, of a lot of her projects with a focus on HMOs and multi-unit freehold blocks, blocks of flats, effectively. But, you know, still interested in the humble old single let and anything that really looks like a good deal. She works with joint venture partners and investors to continue growing the portfolio, speaks at a lot of networking events. And for me, I think one of the things that is really worth mentioning at this early stage is one of the co-founders of a group called Property Mums UK, a group that I think is doing fantastic things to support not just women in the property space, but women raising children and building property businesses. So go and check that out if that's your kind of jam. But I'll leave it there as far as an intro goes. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. So sit back, relax, and see you on the other side. Well, Louise, I am thrilled to have you on the podcast today. I'm delighted to find out a little bit more about your own story. But first of all, just a big welcome and thank you for taking the time to join us.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I'm absolutely honoured to be asked to be a guest on your podcast. Long-time listener, so I'm really, really looking forward to the interview. Yeah,
I thought I was going to get a long-time listener, first-time caller shout out there, but I love a little bit of that. I was going to say Tom Cruise. No, not Tom Cruise. Tom Hanks. But yeah, I'm thrilled to have you here. We have got a lot of ground to cover. Just reading through a bit of your bio, you've been doing this for a little while. When did you first get into property?
Oh, gosh, yes, we've been investing now for 17 years, which seems like a lifetime. But actually, I think if I go back, we were just amateurs. We were just buying, didn't really know what we were doing. And actually, fast forward to around 2016 was when we actually made this more of a business and I took it more seriously. So yes, we've been investing for a long time, but actually sort of go back then, it was very much I can go through that moment when I first had property, just absolutely, there was a spark that I just thought, wow, there's something in this. And off the back of the book was when I bought my first investment. So,
What book was it that caused that spark for you?
Do you know what? It's not one I'd particularly recommend. It was a guy called Andy Shaw.
Okay.
I had never read any property investment books before. And it was one of these things where we had five free chapters. It was online and you had to buy the book to actually read the rest of it. And the first five chapters was just a ridiculous amount of hype as to how good property investment was and the fact that it doubles in value every 10 years. And but, I mean, it did the job. It got me hooked and I read the book, but it was quite frustrating. There was a lot of hype before I actually got to the how-to bit. But it certainly, it was a hook to get me into property, that's for sure. But not one I would particularly recommend now.
Well, no, I mean, that's fair enough. But it's just interesting to hear how everyone gets started. And it's usually something similar, right? It's maybe not the best information or the best written book, but just, you know, we usually remember what that first moment was where we thought, yeah, hang on a minute, properties maybe got something to offer here. I think it was possibly Sarah Beeny for me, you know, watching, again, probably, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, watching Sarah Beeny do up these houses, and just everyone, no matter how badly it went, it was probably pre-recession. So no matter how badly they managed the projects, people just made boatloads of cash. And I thought, yeah,
always
that sounds
came
pretty
out
cool.
on top. Yeah, yeah, they exactly. did. I remember that series.
You got to love a rising market. You're kind of, I was going to say corporate, it's maybe not, I don't know if you would class it as corporate, but certainly your career background outside of property is pretty interesting as well. What keeps you busy when you're not investing?
Oh, gosh, yeah, it's quite different. So I've got a very equestrian background, brought up around horses. I competed a lot. I left school. I worked at a riding school. I got my exams to teach, and I also enjoy training the horses, sort of starting them up. I get them used to a rider being on their back and bringing them on. That was very much my background. And that's something that I still do in the now. I mean, I don't have quite so much time for it. And my daughter is now the horsey girl. She's the one that's got the horses in the yard. And I don't really have much to ride now. But my job, I do still work. I'm still involved in the horses. So that's I still get my fulfillment with the equestrian side as well as the property, which is great.
Nice. Yeah, it's an expensive hobby from what I hear.
Yes, it can be. It can absolutely be. I mean, yes. And actually, when I was working with the horses initially, you know, it was a lot of hard graft and low pay. And I think we talk about those transferable skills. I mean, actually, it was just learning to, when you fall off, get back on that horse. And I think that can really apply to property as well. You know, that deal falls over and you've got to get back up, and that grit and determination takes you through. But also just early starts, you know, grafting, late nights. And I think when you start a business, and particularly in property as well, I think there's an element of that, that it can be hard work until you start to systemize things as well. So although the two are incredibly different as a career, for me, it works really nicely alongside. And I say I'm still involved in the equestrian side of things, and it's almost like my day off, to be honest. You go and just let my brain rest. So it's sort of very 50-50, but it also having that extra income certainly helps with mortgages and things as well. So I'm not quite ready to let that go yet.
Okay, good to know. And I think that's such an important point as well. You know, we're kind of almost running to the finish line here, but that idea of looking to escape from the corporate world, I think some people rush into it, you know, and they want to get out, and I understand that. But the benefits of hanging on to a job, or, you know, maybe if you're doing this with your husband or your wife, spouse, you know, one of you at least staying in the corporate world can have a lot of benefits. It gives you that stability, it gives you that mortgageability, just takes some of the stress off. We want freedom, I'm sure, but, you know, it's sometimes I see people jumping a little bit too soon.
Yeah, 100%. And actually now my husband is kind of fully in the business. So he effectively has, you know, he was always self-employed, but he started doing some of our projects. And now we've got so much on, and he is literally just from one project to the next. So that our portfolio has to now support his income. But whatever else is earned is just reinvested into the company until, you know, we've reached a point that actually I'm quite happy to step back, and certainly on the long-term goals would be some traveling and things, which perhaps wouldn't run quite so well alongside a job. I think, like you say, it makes it much easier to get mortgages, and just having, you know, that extra income where you're not solely relying on the property has enabled us just to keep reinvesting and perhaps growing a little bit quicker as well, which certainly works for us.
Yeah, definitely pros and cons to both approaches, but I like what you have done. And you mentioned your husband there. Am I right in thinking he comes from a construction background of sorts?
Yeah, so he's primarily, they had a family business, which was all to do with groundworks, particularly drainage. So they would go in on these large sites and do all the groundworks for the new builds. He was very involved in that in his earlier years. And then once we started investing in property ourselves, he then got on board with more of the builder type stuff. So then coming indoors and, you know, the fitting the kitchens, the bathrooms, and just everything to do with the renovations, other than, you know, things like the electrics, the plumbing, sure, and the plastering. And he tries to avoid the decorating as well. So he's not a fan of that. But he's an absolute perfectionist in what he does. And actually those skills of need of the drainage. And if we've got a project where we're adding en suites to a HMO or something and getting all of that, that's a really good skill to have. Or indeed extensions, we can extend property a lot cheaper because of his skills, and he can do all the groundwork first, which is a real benefit.
So is he fairly hands-on with your projects then?
Very hands-on. I mean, he's actually struggled to let go a little bit, and we're just sort of in that transition stage now where we've got builders that have worked with us for a number of years, and I'm just having to say, look, you've got to, you know, trust and give them some more, you know, responsibility. And I think he's finally coming around to that. Actually, if we're going to grow, then you've got to be able to let go of some of the business. And it's been really challenging for him. And I think that's partly because he's just such a perfectionist in what he does. But actually, the last couple of projects he's managed to just sit back and let go a little bit and really seen the benefit of that as well, which, good. Yeah, that'll enable us to grow a bit quicker.
Yeah, for sure. It's not uncommon as a difficult transition. I mean, I think having some kind of technical background as a trade or something, you know, our architects, all that sort of stuff can be so valuable to help you get started, to save costs, to, you know, see the potential that other people maybe can't, but it is something you almost need to promote yourself out of to get to that next stage of growth, because his time is valuable, right? There are other things that probably need doing in your business. And if he's too busy with a spade in his hand digging drainage pits, like it's not the most valuable thing that he could probably be doing as the co-owner of that business. So yeah, I'm glad you're thinking about that, but I see that struggle quite often, you know, like the reluctance to hand over that responsibility to someone else.
Yeah. See, I don't have that. I'm quite happy to hand over responsibility of stuff that I don't particularly want to do. I spent a year last year, I think the business grew quite quickly, and I found myself doing, you know, so much of the admin work. And I just said, actually, I just need to take a step back and systemize this and outsource as much as possible. And I'm very happy to do that. And if there's a few mistakes, and we just correct those and we work our way forward. I think obviously it's really important to work with the right people. And we've got a great team around us. So, he's looked at me and gone, okay, you've got a bit more free time now. Maybe I need to do this as well.
Do you have a clear split in roles and responsibilities between the two of you? It sounds as though you do, but, you know, husband and wife, there can be some challenges there, I guess. Do you work well together?
On the whole, we work really well together. I mean, we're not sitting at opposite ends of a desk, so it's not like we have to, you know, spend 24 hours a day together. But yeah, we work really well. He's got his department. So basically, I will be out there finding the deals. I'll build the relationships with investors and estate agents, stack the deals. And then once I've got them through the conveyancing, then I hand him the keys and it's like, right, over to you. And it's nice to just go down and see how the project's going. I quite enjoy, once we've got the keys, we'll walk around something, or potentially before, looking at the floor plan, you know, how we can do things, how we can maximize the profit. And he's incredibly creative in seeing a property and be able to really maximize that profit and to just completely transform the look of it. Sometimes I like the interior design thing, but actually, you know, looking at floor plans and where you can put those en suites, or how you can juggle a studio flat into a one bed. And that's where he is very, very, you know, creative with his mind. And on the whole, it does. I mean, I perhaps have a bigger picture. I'm a little bit more of a go-getter. My goals are quite big. And sometimes he reins me in a little bit. Go, hang on a minute, you're trying to run before we can walk. So we sometimes, you know, clash there. But I think ultimately there's a happy medium there. And property was always my thing. I mean, initially, back in 2006, 2007, when we bought our first investment, and off the back of reading this book, I said to him about this property investment. He said, it's not me. It's too risky. I'm not interested. He said, but look, you know, you do what you need to do, but just don't tell me anything about it, because I'll just, you know, I won't be able to sleep at night. And so it took a little while for him to gain some traction and actually, you know, come on board with this. And I think once we'd got that first one over the line and we could see that it was cash flowing and it was okay, there is something in this, maybe I need to step up. And now the business is very much the two of us running it, and it's very enjoyable. Much better than trying to do it on my own.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, it is nice to have somebody that kind of knows what you're doing and is there to support you. It's it sounds like you got a good team going there. And you mentioned, you know, I think one of the first things you said was your first foray into property was maybe not the most professional. It wasn't until 2016 that it became a real business for you. What did those early years look like from an investing point of view? What kept you busy then? What sort of deals were you doing?
So we bought, our first investment was a one bed flat. Mm-hmm. We bought that in 2007. And just after that went through, sort of 2008, credit crunch happened. I remember meeting the surveyor there after we'd refurbished it to refinance, which is what my book had said. You know, it was basically this BRRR method that we talk about now. Mm-hmm. So we'd bought it, we'd refurbished it. We're now at the refinance stage. And I remember just standing outside this property and the surveyor going, this is the worst crash we've ever seen. Property is just going to bottom out. And at the time, nobody could quite understand what I was doing anyway. You know, friends and family thought I'd gone absolutely mad. Peter actually thought I'd gone a bit mad. But so literally, I just had to really, really believe in myself. And even though, the property didn't value as much as we'd hoped it had, I think because I'd bought it so below market value, I'd bought it off a very motivated seller. We were still able to pull some money out. Actually, we were on a variable rate mortgage at the time, and then the interest rates plummeted, so it ended up being one of the best cash flowing single lets we've ever had. We were earning about £600 a month in the rent, and
oh, wow,
we were paying about £50 a month in the mortgage. It was ridiculous. But that was a real silver lining for that deal. And then sort of after that, and slowly, you know, Peter was coming on board with me as well, we bought just single lets. I think around 2009, Peter had a nasty motorbike accident. And I think off the back of that, somebody had gone into him and he was in hospital for quite a while. I remember being in the ambulance and him talking absolute gibberish and thinking, my goodness, you know, what now? This is quite a scary moment. But off the back of that, I think we kind of, there were two things. A, he was self-employed and he then had, you know, no income. He wasn't working. And so he had to make a very swift recovery. And literally he went on to one of the sites and said, look, I'm digging with his brother. Can I get in the digger? Can I just earn some money? Because I'm worried about not paying our mortgage. And with a full cast on his leg and his arm in a sling, he managed to get in this digger and just started, you know, just working to get some money back in. And we went, okay, well, that's a really big lesson. We need to have something else. We need some passive income, or, you know, there really is something in this property. And also that, you know, life is short, that it can be taken from you just like that. So, and I think that was a bit of a mindset change for him as well. Okay, I need to get more on board with this property investing. So we just bought single lets. And yes, we bought them well, we refurbished them. Sometimes we didn't refinance them straight away. We'd leave it for a little bit of capital growth there as well. But very much alongside our day jobs. And buying in our area where we live, that's something that I've always been quite passionate about. Mm-hmm. I know the prices around here. Obviously, Peter was doing the work, so there's a huge advantage of not being too far away. But also, as I became quite good at finding a deal and building those relationships with estate agents, and most of what we bought has always been through estate agents, if they phone up and say that they've got something that's a good price, I want to be able to get there really quickly and be the first one in the door. Otherwise, if it's a good deal, it's genuinely going to be gone very quickly. And I just, you know, we kept that strategy of area and still to this day, you know, within half an hour drive of where we're living seems to work for us. And we're based in Kent, so property prices aren't cheap compared to some of the northern areas. But although maybe cash flow is not quite as good as if we went to Manchester, there's good capital growth here. So it's certainly worked for us.
And take me then to 2016. I think you said this became more of a business. What was the turning point there, both in terms of, you know, why you felt at that point, this is now a business versus a sideline? And did that change your approach to investing at all as well?
Yes, totally. So by this stage, we'd got two children. They were quite small.
They have a habit of changing things, right?
They do, absolutely. I had a bit more time off with my daughter, and I think I started to get itchy feet. I really wanted something more in life again. And off the back of that, I found Susanna Cole, and she was doing, you know, an online course, and I think it was about £1,500 for the year. And it was a tremendous amount of online content. And also we were joining some conference calls every other week. And that was a real eye-opener. It was the first time really I'd heard the terminology of HMOs, okay, using other people's money, you know, freehold blocks and things. So that really did open my eyes. And actually initially thought, my goodness, that sounds terrifying. I would never want to do something like a HMO, particularly on these calls where everyone comes with their problems. And I was, well, goodness. Yeah. but actually, Susanna was the one that said, I need to get out there networking. And so
Susanna,
I joined,
does love to network.
She does love to network, absolutely. And she didn't give me much choice in it. You've got to get out to your, yeah, I think it was the local PIN meeting. And I was absolutely terrified walking into that room. But I was boring absolutely everybody around me with my property talk. Nobody was particularly interested. And I went into this room and started talking property to people. And I was like, wow, they're actually interested. And we could have a conversation and a two-way conversation about property. So that actually I really enjoyed. And then Simon Zucci was at one of the PIN meetings, and then he came and sold the mastermind program as well. And by this time I was kind of hooked on this whole learning versus doing. I mean, we were doing in the background. So it's very easy just to end up being a course junkie. Mm-hmm. But we off the back of Susanna's advice, we'd done some deal sourcing and some flips as well, which have been very successful. So then I did the year-long mastermind course with Simon, and also met some incredible people off the back of that as well that I've gone on to since do some bits with from that network.
Amazing. So, I mean, how much of that was, if you don't feel positively about Susanna or Simon, I'm sure you do. I'm not looking for opinions on them here, but in terms of that process, the progress for you, of getting support and more information, could you have done it on your own?
I think people can do it on their own. I don't think I would have done. I think I needed someone to hold me accountable. I look up to other people and what they've done, and they make it then possible. It's like the Roger Bannister thing, isn't it? And the four minute mile, is it? You know, we want somebody, you can see.
I think
see
it was four. I was like, yeah, I think it's 4 minutes.
Is
yeah,
it, have but, I got that right? Yeah. Yeah. But if it's 4 minutes, it might be less than that. But it is like, if somebody else has done it, then it's achievable. Mm-hmm. So I had very positive experiences with both Susanna and Simon. I knew that I could potentially fall into that trap of needing to be in that environment to work. And I don't think I need, in all honesty, what I'd learned with Susanna, I probably didn't need to do mastermind. Yeah, okay. You know, it was very much repeated with the knowledge that I needed to progress our business at the time. But
that's sometimes eye-opening as well, right? Like that moment when you kind of think, actually, I do know this. Like I've got the information now. I know what I'm talking about. And I think that can be quite transformative as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I had got the knowledge. It was sometimes it's almost like a procrastination thing. Mm. That, oh, well, I'll just do this next course and then I'll know that and I'll just do this. And you can end up, you know, your goalposts move in terms of where you want to be because you're procrastinating. I think off the back of Mastermind more than anything was the network. I went on to do Property Mums. So I co-host a group called Property Mums. And that was two of my very good friends from Mastermind that we've collaborated and formed this group.
Nice. I was going to say that.
It's great. And then off the back of that also, James Rogers, who you say property and poppadom seems to be taking over the country, but I'm now the host of the Kent property and Popperdoms meets down this way. And so, yeah, I think certainly for me, that training, I needed it. But there's definitely a point that you actually just go out and do it, because you're not going to learn just sitting in a room. And yeah, you've got to go and take the bull by the horns. And after doing our first HMO, my goodness, I learned more, you know, doing that one project than I would have done probably another 3 years sitting in a hotel room learning.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's the... I've been kind of thinking about this recently, right? Because there's the benefit, and, you know, some people think that, you know, kind of education is the best way to learn. Other people believe that experience is the best way to learn. But actually, I don't think it's an either or. I think both is the right mix, right? Having some support and education, like you said, the kind of, you know, Roger Bannister, seeing what other people have done, having other people go before you you know, kind of learning from them, but then also combining that with your own execution, putting stuff into practice, seeing what problems you come up against, and having someone that you can go back to and get support, get your questions answered. I think it's that combination of education and experience that really kind of is where we see people excel.
Absolutely. Yeah. And things like the podcasts, you know, as I say, with listening to other people's journeys as well, and you'll relate to some of those more than others, but you can't, there's so much free content out there now. Back when I was learning, there wasn't so much, you know, podcasts weren't a thing. The occasional book, like I said, that was one of my first introductions to property investing. But you've got Audible, you know, there is just so much YouTube free content out there. You have to be careful what you're listening to. Obviously, it's not all great advice, but I don't think it's quite the same now. And people just, I mean, that can have a disadvantage in that it can just be overwhelmed. You don't quite know, particularly if you're starting out, what area, what strategy. I speak to a lot of people like that who are just, again, going, wow, I want to get started, but do I do SA? Do I do HMOs? Mm. Do I go and, you know, do a flip or commercial to there's just so much out there that I think that can sometimes be a negative. But I'll say to a lot of people that I speak to, you've got to have a goal. You've got to know where you want to be. And if you're trying to run this alongside your corporate job and you're not ready to step out of that yet, then don't build a huge portfolio of HMOs, because it's going to be really, really time consuming. So everyone's situation is slightly different.
Yeah. Your focus has moved on to HMOs, despite what you just said, right? So I think since you went through with Susanna and Simon, it more or less, well, not just HMOs, actually. Is it HMOs and blocks of flats, or what has been your focus since then?
Yeah. So we did go on to HMOs. Just to be clear, I am now part-time in my business, in my job. So I've got a lot more time. But actually, we've managed to systemize a lot of what we're doing with the HMOs. But yes, we went on our first HMO with a joint venture partner. We invest down in Folkestone, which is by the coast. And it was a tricky one. And going back to, so you only learn when you're there. And I was trying to do lots of research. Will this work? The area at the time was didn't really have these super smart HMOs. They were very white walls, and, you know, your checked mattress in the spare room.
Yeah, I can picture them well. It's
very basic, you know, aimed at, you know, just that market that perhaps wasn't as professional as what we wanted to aim for. So it was like taking the bull by the horns and going, okay, well, let's just go with this, run with this. I've got a good feeling. I think it will go down well. I learned loads doing that first HMO, including trying to let it. We had a letting agent that we ended up with having one dodgy tenant there and everyone else left. And there was some huge learnings off the back of that, which is when we went, okay, if we're going to have decent tenants, we need to bring this in-house and look after, you know, this side of the business ourselves. But we then went on to do a couple more in that area very successfully. Back to brick, all en suite. We have only stuck to the 6-bed model because we didn't want to be stacking properties and then not getting the planning. We're lucky we haven't had any Article 4 to deal with, so there was no planning restrictions on what we wanted to do. But the area has these lovely big Victorian properties which just lend themselves to, they're almost a bit too big to be these family homes, and actually just being able to add the en suites and have that decent communal space as well. It's a good area for that. But we, in 2020, when we were converting one of the HMOs, obviously COVID hit, we were slightly delayed on that project. And I was desperately looking for our next property to have going through conveyancing that we could move to. And actually, I think the world and his brother decided to move to the coast after the lockdowns were lifted. And it was incredibly hard. The market just went absolutely mad. And I thought, found myself going, okay, we're either going to pay what I effectively think is more, these properties are selling for more than they're actually worth, or we need to change strategy here, or we just sit tight and ride out this wave. We wanted to carry on. You know, we've got a team of people. We needed to keep busy. So that's when the multi-unit block kind of hit us. We sort of found this property that was very undervalued. The rents were very low and it hadn't sold. And of course, there wasn't that many investors in the market at the time that were looking. I think a lot of people like us had gone, wow, but you know, everything's just selling. It was ridiculous, ridiculous prices. And so we went to view this block of flats. It was four flats. The top one was a masonette, so it was quite a bit bigger. And the others were studios, but actually they had a lot of potential to reconfigure the floor plan and make them one beds because they were big enough. So we busied ourselves on that for about 8 months, and actually went, wow, this is a strategy we like, because A, it can still be income generating while you're doing the refurbishment, which was great. Obviously, mm-hmm. HMOs are costly, certainly if you've got it on bridging for a 6 month refurb. So we were going into one flat, getting that refurbished or renovated. The basement flat had some major works done to it because it needed tanking.
Okay.
Everything else was fairly light refurb, and we were able to move people around. If they wanted to stay, we gave them the option, you know, your rent will be going up, but if you know, you want to stay, then we'll move you about. There was only one lady that did. But yeah, we really like that strategy. So we've gone on to sort of stick to that. I mean, I'm certainly not going to say no to HMOs in the future. I do think if you've targeted the right demographic and your systems are in place, then it's actually, once they're up and running, they're really, they're a very good asset, very good asset. And obviously much higher cash flowing than the single lets.
Yeah, great. It's nice to kind of see you go through that transition. I think people often feel like they're, oh, well, you know, if I decide I'm going to do HMOs, that's all I can ever do. And it's naive in some ways, right? Like our strategy can change, the market will absolutely change and sometimes force our hand to do so. And having a diverse portfolio is probably a better route than having all your eggs in one basket as well. Would you say that at the moment, the multi-unit blocks, are they your favorite? Do you have favorites, or you know, is it the diversity that you like?
I do like the diversity, and I have to say with the HMOs, I quite like the whole interior design thing as well. I love furnishing them and getting involved. I mean, I know, you know, as to have a systemized business, but I actually quite enjoy that, going in and going, choosing the colors on the walls, and you can have a bit more fun with a HMO. You can make it, you know, you can have the vision as to making that a beautiful place. And you can with the flats, don't get me wrong, but you've got to ultimately remember that's somebody's home that they're going to be renting and not necessarily a short-term thing like the HMOs might be. Our typical tenancy is around 9 months to probably a year and a half. Some have been with us a lot longer. Mm-hmm. Whereas the flats are more long-term, people's long-term homes. But yes, I would say we're about to complete on another block. But I think it's just nice to have that extra strategy in, you know, in your toolbox, really. They're not dissimilar to HMOs. And like you've just said, I think one of the things that hit me during the COVID period was, wow, to have all your eggs in one basket could have been quite kind of scary. You know, if we just got a whole portfolio of SA at that time, I would have been having a lot of sleepless nights. And even with the HMOs, you know, there was a lot of talk, well, will people want to be living with other people in the future? You know, it was all a bit scaremongering. But I think that did open my eyes to actually, yes, I think it's important to have a strategy. And if you're kind of cookie cuttering that, then you're de-risking yourself. You know the type of property. It's easier to find the deals. It's easier to have the conversations with you know, agents as to what you're looking at. But you get known in your area for what you're looking for. But I don't think there's any harm in diversifying. And certainly once you've kind of systemized that strategy, and yeah, for us, it just works really nicely alongside the HMOs as well.
Yeah. Nice. You've mentioned the importance of goals a couple of times. I'm assuming that means you've got pretty clear idea of what your goals are. What does the future of investing look like for you? Where is this business going to take you? Is there ever a day where you maybe do step away from the day job?
Oh, I don't know. I think it depends what day of the week you ask me. No, I mean, ultimately, we're absolutely loving growing the business. We'd like to double the size of the portfolio in the next 2.5 to 3 years. So that's our aim at the moment. We've not been, you know, a couple that have gone super speedy. We've been quite methodic in our growth. And I think actually that's kind of compounded a little bit. So you kind of gradually get busier as you go along. But I don't want to find myself a busy fool. I very much enjoy what I'm doing at the moment, and I need to keep that at the forefront of my mind. I don't want this to become a thorn in my side. So I need to be able to double that cash flow. I've always struggled to have clear plan in what we want to do. I came into this year saying we were going to get another HMO on our books, and an estate agent phoned me with an absolute unicorn deal, which is a 2-bed bungalow. So, you know, why would I not do it? The GDV and what we were buying it for, there was a huge amount of equity we did talk about flipping it on. I think we're just going to put it in the portfolio, but great cash flow, and we can refinance all of our money back out. So free properties. I think actually having that income and going, okay, that needs to be the forefront of my mind. It's very difficult to plan because mm-hmm. so many different deals come up at different times. But no, we certainly have an income goal. We have some life goals alongside that as well. But ultimately, it's doing what we enjoy. And I think that's got to be at the forefront of your mind. You could very easily just suddenly go, wow, I'm a busy fool here and I'm not really enjoying what we're doing. So I think that's, we've got some pretty clear goals that say life goals. Eventually, when the kids are a bit older, we'd like to do a bit more traveling and stuff as well.
Okay. And you mentioned, I want to look back to a mention you made earlier of the Property Mums group that you started. I want to give that a bit of a shout out, because I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who, you know, would love that support network around them. But first of all, before we kind of get into what it is, where did the idea for that come from? And, you know, I guess also the desire to start something else. I think it probably shows your kind of entrepreneurial mindset, right? The fact that you're kind of looking for new ideas and bringing them to life. But it doesn't sound like you're quiet and you've got tons of free time. So why start something else?
It's true, but if you want something done, you ask a busy person, don't you?
Well, yeah, there's something in that.
No, so I was approached by a good friend of mine, Anki Bell, who had got this idea. Yeah, it was her idea to create this group. She herself had got 4 children, had built up this very, you know, successful portfolio. But off the back of it, I think we had this conversation between us. And then we later bought Joe Jameson De Silva, another very good friend of mine, in on the three of us sort of having this group. And we grew it on Facebook first. So we've got a Facebook group called Property Mums UK. And then we've held monthly roundtables. So they're online. So the ladies can come to those groups with their problems or successes and just really have a coffee over some friendly women chat. But we also run some residential retreats where Joe, Anki and I will provide a lot of content in property investment. But what's so unique about those groups is the fact that these women all seem to be, we're in the same position. And I think when you go off to these courses or you're on social media and you can see these young men or entrepreneurial men who are absolutely going, you know, 100 miles an hour, and they're having their ice bath in the morning and they're going for their run all before 8 o'clock before starting and doing all these viewings. And actually, the reality of a lot of us mums, where we've been running around ragged, trying to do the school run and the lunch boxes and get the uniform ironed. And in between us, we wanted to make that a little bit more real. And okay, you're not alone. And I know when I first started out in property, or when I say first started out, when I started in 2016 to grow this as a better business, I felt quite alone in the fact that, wow, I was trying, you know, it was almost, I shouldn't say that I'm trying to cook dinner while I'm, you know, talking to somebody, an investor on the phone or something, because it didn't seem very professional, but the kids are hungry and they needed feeding. And I think actually it just brought these women together, and we all have those, we share those same issues that, yeah, we had to cancel that viewing because one of our children were off school and they were poorly. And I think that just became a really, really good support network. And we've had some incredible feedback from those events where the women saying, what other event can we talk about property and the menopause in the same conversation, you know? And and those women have really sort of formed bonds between them and gone on to do business. I've absolutely loved that side of this Property Mums group and what we've brought together. And as I say, we're the hosts, but actually it's the ladies that make it worthwhile and enjoyable.
Yeah, it's always the way with things like this. Not to discredit your effort in pulling it together, but the people are absolutely what make these groups. You know, the members that show up and offer that support. They allow you to create something much bigger than yourself, which is,
yeah,
is nice. It's funny because I was Googling there to see what the stats were as you were talking through that. I was like, you know, I see so many women in the property world. Is that because most of the time I spend online is Instagram versus LinkedIn? Like, is there a split there, male versus female? Apparently not. Apparently Instagram has slightly more than 50% of a male user base. So maybe that's not it. But I mean, you look at the impact that women are having on the UK property market. I mean, do you think that I'm trying to think, you know, the reason why so many women and specifically maybe mums end up looking at property? Does it fit well alongside a day job despite being a mum, you know, despite the challenges it brings? Like, is running a business easier than trying to kind of bend family life to a corporate job?
I don't think it's easy. Well, I mean, yes, in terms that you've got your own time frame to do things. So I remember in those early days, I'd be putting my children to bed and then sitting down at 9 o'clock, getting my computer out. You'd be trolling through the right move or maybe updating some tenancy agreements or doing the paperwork. So it can work around. And I think that's why a lot of these women are, okay, I'm ready to be something more than just a mum. Maybe they have stepped out of their job, or maybe they're on maternity leave, or, you know, or sometimes some of these ladies, their children have now flown the nest and they've gone to university or left home and actually looking for something to do more for me now. So it completely, you know, there's a huge spectrum of where everybody sits on that in terms of being a mum. But I remember speaking at an event in London. And I stood up I was talking, I was actually going through a deal, but then at the end, I was sort of talking about property mums. And as I looked in this audience, and there was around 85 people in the audience, and I was saying about property mums and come and join our group. And as I was sort of looking at the audience, I was thinking, there are hardly any women here. No, you know, the women that are there, they might not even be mums. So it was quite interesting to go, wow, actually, I feel like I've just, you know, pitching to myself here. There's very few women in that audience, but I don't think that's necessarily the case of all the networking events. Certainly the one that I'm hosting at the moment, there's a lot of women there, and I'm very proud of that they feel that they can come, and it's friendly, and it's that environment, and they tend to, a lot of the women will sit together, which is funny to observe. I think it is a good thing to be able to fit around. If you're determined, it's tough because, you know, the children aren't sleeping, or they're late to bed, or, you know, for a number of reasons, it can be very, very tiring. But I do think it's something that you can fit in between looking after kids. I think it certainly worked for me, definitely.
Fantastic. Well, all I want to ask, we've got two questions. One of them's a nice easy one, so we'll park that for a second. But perhaps slightly more challenging, or perhaps you know exactly what your how you would answer this. We have a lot of listeners to the show who are just starting out. Maybe they're thinking about doing their first deal, or you know, just even trying to figure out if property is the right thing for them. You've been in this for, what did you say, 16 years or so? A good period of time anyway. What advice would you give to somebody who was just looking to start out? What do you think's had the biggest impact on you and your career that you'd like to pass on to the next generation?
Just do it. Just go out there and do it. As I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of free information. I don't think you need to go on a super expensive course. I think you can learn so much, but I would also say start small, make small mistakes. I'm a fan of buying a little terraced house or a one bed flat, and just cutting your teeth on smaller deals. Just, you learn so much. So let's not make huge mistakes by trying to do it at 12 bed HMO straight away, where you've got planning issues and all sorts. So start small, but just go out there and do it, because it's very easy to keep putting it off and procrastinating.
Yeah, perfect. And the second question that I promised would be an easy one. In terms of finding out more about you, maybe finding out more about Property Mums group, connecting with you on social media, where are the best places for people to go to find out what you've got going on?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. So that's a platform that I've been really working hard on over the last 6 months. So you certainly find me on LinkedIn. Our Facebook group for the Property Mums, it's called Property Mums UK. So you should be able to search that and answer a couple of questions to get into the group. I am on Facebook. I am on Instagram, not quite as much as I am LinkedIn. So yeah, give me a follow. Or a shout out would be great.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Louise. I've had a blast chatting to you and finding out a bit more about your story. And I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
I've had a lovely time. Yeah, thank you ever so much for having me, Mike. I've really, really enjoyed it.